Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so I share ideas and strategies, practical tools that you can use. I interview experts. I share the things that worked for me, but also those big epic fails that I've made and continue to make along the way. And all because I believe the teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And I would argue that this curiosity and creativity is more important now than ever, as students inhabit a world that's constantly changing, a world of machine learning and AI. And so for that reason, we talk about things like design thinking, technology, project-based learning. And my goal each week is to share something that you can actually use. And today we're talking about a topic that we get into a lot, which is PBL. But before we get started, I just want to tell you I am updating our PBL unit. So if you go to boostpbl.org, by the end of this month, so if you go in on November 1st, you're gonna see updated Boost PBL projects where I have added new resources, new scaffolds, new supports, and yes, a couple of new projects as well. So if you wanna get started with mini projects, sprints, and full-blown PBL, check out boostpbl.org. Without further ado, let's talk about today's topic of finding project ideas. So I love coming up with project ideas. The brainstorming process feels a little bit like going to your own mental candy store, where I get to peruse past experiences, seek out new interests, find materials, and get inspired by whatever pops up. Or better yet, maybe it's a little bit more like being a chef with a giant pantry full of ingredients. I can pick various spices here and there, and random ingredients, and I can fuse them together to create a new dish. Or perhaps it's more like being an explorer. Yes, I have the constraint of a curriculum map, but this map gives me a chance to find new possibilities and find a new route. In fact, when we think about the notion of a curriculum map, I think maps should inspire possibilities rather than limiting the route. I think that the constraints provided within it give us a chance to think inside the box so that we can think differently about the box. So this creates a sense of creative constraint. So I get it. I love coming up with PBL ideas, but there's a dark side to it. They tend to be my ideas, which means I'm likely to choose ideas and topics that I'm interested in or ideas that I think my students will like. Whether it's at the higher ed level where I currently teach or at the middle school level where I used to teach, I have to force myself to listen to others. This includes the larger community, the educators I work with, and the students I teach. I need to listen to what they want as well. That being said, I've known some people who really struggle to come up with new ideas. Their problem is the opposite side. Over the last decade, I guess it's been longer than a decade, probably 15 years or so, I've had the honor of leading PBL workshops with teachers all over the world. I've done coaching with teachers in elite private schools and low-income Title I schools, like the kind where I used to work. I've been in rural settings and in the heart of big, major metropolises. And for all these differences, I'm struck by how similar our concerns and challenges tend to be. And one of the most common questions I've heard asked is, how do you come up with good project ideas? So I want to explore this. Let's talk about a few places we can go to come up with project ideas. But before we get there, I want to talk about whether or not a project idea is actually good. And so just bear with me for a moment. I want to ask the question, what makes a project work? So it's amazing when projects work well, right? This learning tends to stick because it reduces cognitive load on the working memory. Students learn in a more authentic way. You get the idea. They're empowered. They're motivated. It is phenomenal. So that's the ideal. But we also have times when projects don't work. Like I remember doing this, what I thought was going to be a really cool project involving, you know, having students learn about the civil rights movement and design their own civil rights museum. And I'm telling you, it just didn't work at all. Like it was an absolute disaster. And it wasn't structured, it wasn't authentic, it was confusing, you get the idea. It failed for that reason. And I had other ones. I had a Genius Hour project that was too open-ended. I had another project that involved, you know, doing a service project to a nursing home, and then we didn't get the permission to actually visit it, and it didn't work. Yeah, so I had some epic fails, just putting it out there. But there are times when projects work, and what we can do is ahead of time, we can ask, what makes a project actually work? So the following are some criteria. First of all, they need to be authentic. The best projects feel real to students. If you are familiar, last week's podcast episode was all about community connections. We need to have those community connections, those moments where the learning connects directly to the community. And that can be in an authentic launch. It can be in the research that they do. It could be in doing a task that fits the way people actually engage in projects in the real world. So it could be an entrepreneurial project in an economics class that has a business plan, market research, product prototyping in a way that resembles what people actually do with real businesses. By contrast, the worst projects are the ones that don't have a real context at all. They're the ones that seem totally arbitrary. Jennifer Gonzalez from Cult of Pedagogy describes these as Grecian urn projects, and I think that's one of the best descriptions of them, where it's a craft, it's not related to content, you're not learning anything deeper. It feels like, well, it's artificial. It's pseudo-context. And I've alluded to this already, but the second piece is to align to the standards. So going PBL in our approach doesn't mean that we abandon the standards. And so that's why it's really important that we make sure that whatever project we come up with actually aligns to the standards that we're teaching. It also needs to be feasible. Sometimes we have great ideas, but we don't have the time or materials or expertise to pull it off. And this is why we need to ask the question, is this actually realistic for my students? Can we actually pull this off? And I'm not advocating here for lowering standards. I'm not talking about like, are my kids capable of? No, what I'm talking about is, do we have the materials for it? Do we have the time for it? Do we have the capacity for it from a planning standpoint as a teacher? And then the last one is challenging. It needs to be something challenging. We want students to struggle through that productive struggle rather than just doing a project that's easy. So those are the things we're looking for when it comes to project ideas. But where do we actually find the project ideas? That's a bigger question. And for that, I want to share four different starting places. And the first one that we're going to get into is going to be something that is probably pretty familiar to you. It's kind of where most of our minds go, I would argue. And it's online. Explore online research. So you can start out by doing a cursory examination or exploration of PBL curriculum. You might find yourself inspired by what they've created, which then leads to a new idea of your own. So maybe they have a project involving an inclusive playground, and that leads you to this really cool indoor play space project that's multisensory and ideal for all learners. You might find yourself wanting to start out with curriculum that someone else has created. And if you want to do design sprints, mini projects, like I mentioned, check out Boost PBL projects. That's a great starting place. You might use AI tools. So here what you're doing is you're using AI as a thought partner, and you use the facts cycle. You can look at it on the blog post that corresponds to this podcast episode. And you essentially give the AI chatbot a prompt that says, I'm designing a PBL for my students. This is what I teach. This is my community. You feed it any necessary data. You use a raft for it, role, audience, format, and topic in this case, or actually I would say tone instead of topic. And then what you end up doing is coming up with ideas that you can modify on your own. Now, I used to think that this approach wasn't creative or authentic. I felt like, PBL teachers need to create things from scratch, but I've grown to realize that there are multiple ways of engaging in creative thinking. Often it involves being a curator and looking at multiple ideas. In fact, I've noticed that there's this ongoing cycle of critical consuming leading to creativity. So if you're doing this and you're like, well, this isn't very creative of me as a teacher, yes, it is. It absolutely is. And so again, the goal is to engage in critical consuming in a way that leads to creativity. But it doesn't have to be solitary. It can also involve connecting to a larger community. I genuinely believe in the wisdom of the crowds, the notion from James Surowiecki. And he talked about the idea years ago, decades ago, of crowdsourcing. And it's the common adage that the smartest person in the room is the room. So what does it mean to do this? I would argue that connecting to a community makes a huge difference. It could be a PBL community that you know of on Facebook or Threads or something that's part of a PBL course. It could be a PBL group that's local that meets in person. It could be that you have a PBL mastermind group. There's a lot of different ways that we can do this, but the goal is connect to a community. You could do a shared book study with a group of people. You could do some co-planning together. You could do self-paced courses together as a group. I mean, there's so many creative ways to do this. And just bounce ideas back and forth off of each other, and that leads to new ideas. But we can go outside of just our professional circles and reach out to resources outside of just our own. And that's the third idea of talking to industry experts. So years ago, I made a quip at a barbecue. And what I said was probably unfair. I said, nobody actually uses a matrix in real life. And I had been talking to a neighbor about how confusing upper level math was for me in high school, especially having to do matrices by hand. And right then a woman walked up to me and she said, I don't mean to intrude, but matrices are a huge part of what I do every day. She then described how she uses them in her field of engineering, but then described how matrices were vital for everything from satellites to communications and social science, data analysis, computer graphics, animation. She basically said, like, they're used everywhere. Similarly, I didn't really understand the value of trigonometry until as a history major, I learned about how ancient mathematicians used trig to determine the distance of the Earth to both the moon and the sun. Suddenly, math shifted from a series of formulas and recipes and abstract ideas to being a new way of thinking. And it was basically saying math is a powerful way to solve problems. Now, in both of these cases, I failed to grasp the authentic context of math. Now, anytime I find myself saying, we don't use this content in the real world, I don't ask that question. I don't say this. This is a chance for me to say, how do people actually use this in the real world? It's an opportunity to seek out new contexts. Now, I think we can do the same thing with PBL. One of my favorite ways to discover project ideas is by interviewing industry experts who can tell me how they use the content I'm teaching in their context. And the truth is, most people in their jobs do something akin to project-based learning. They work on extended projects and they continue to refine and deepen their learning through projects. And so even though they might not use the word PBL, they're doing PBL in their jobs. The fourth idea is to ask the students. The idea here is that sometimes students have the best ideas for projects. Some of my favorite project ideas were from my classroom. They were from groups of students who would just say, "What if we did blank?" When we ask students for ideas, we build ownership into the process and we tap into their sense of agency. Instead of trying to figure out how to make things relevant to them or authentic to them, we ask them, "What do you find meaningful and relevant and authentic?" And that process right there leads to better planning for us. So the core idea here is that students should have voice and choice, not just in what they learn, but in the planning process itself. One of my favorite structures or strategies for this is a student leadership team. Think of it as a planning session with your students rather than just your colleagues. And we used to do this when I taught middle school on a weekly basis, and each one of us on our team would do a rotation, and the students would come up with interdisciplinary project ideas. They would come up with single content project ideas. They would talk about what's working, what's not working, new protocols that we could try. They would look at student surveys that we had done as exit slips. And really, my favorite piece that they did, though, is I would share with them the standards that we were learning, and I would say, "How does this connect to life? And then what are some projects we could do that relates to this?" And that simple process made a huge difference. In the end, project ideas are all around us. They're in the projects that other people do. They're in the curriculum that you can check out and in some cases buy and modify. They're down the hall with colleagues that you collaborate, and they're online with people that you can meet. They're part of the workforce, and they're within the industry experts that you could interact with, and they're in the minds of your students. So if you're having a hard time coming up with ideas, I would suggest that you tap into all four of those different domains and come up with some PBL ideas. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you listen to your podcast? And maybe click that little subscribe button if you haven't done that either. The other thing that you can do is reach out to a friend, tell a colleague, a friend, let folks know about this podcast. Word of mouth is still one of the best ways to share what this podcast is all about. So again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.